The new Starz series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Saving starts with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider.
Hi, everyone. It's Sophia. Welcome to Work in Progress. Welcome back to Work in Progress with Smarties and Happy New Year. I could not be more excited to be kicking off 2024 with today's guest, none other than CNN's Laura Coates. Laura is not only one of my favorite journalists, she is one of the most impressive people I know, having graduated from Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs and the University of Minnesota Law School before beginning her legal career in private practice. Laura transitioned into the United States Department of Justice, thriving as a federal prosecutor. She served as a trial attorney in the Civil Rights Division of the DOJ during the Bush and Obama administrations. She specialized in the enforcement of voting rights throughout the country. And since 2016, she has served as an analyst for CNN. As of last year, she anchors her own show called Laura Coates Live. She serves as the network's chief legal analyst. She hosts the Laura Coates Show on Sirius XM and last year published an incredible book called Just Pursuit. Laura is, I mean, clearly one of the most inspiring people we've probably ever had on the show. And one of the things I admire so much about her is that she takes all of her expertise and humanizes the worlds of journalism and the law. She is an advocate for the most vulnerable among us. She is open about the fact that pursuing justice is complicated because the pursuit of justice often creates injustice. And she approaches these conversations with you and me and everyone in her audience as a mom, as a Black woman in these industries. She talks about these identities and invites us to examine our own. I am so enamored with her. I have the biggest brain crush on her. And honestly, I just want to be her friend. And after today, you will too. Enjoy. Laura, I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you so much for taking the time. For our friends at home, you all know that I am a journalism junkie. So to kick off 2024, the day that we're recording happens to be January 2nd, with you, my brain is crushing so hard. And I'm just so excited to chat with you today.
I am too. I am such a fan of yours and your work and the podcast. So I am thrilled to have this chance. Maybe we'll start the whole new year off right. And everyone I talk to, I'll love talking to. Maybe I'll cross my fingers and toes and that'll be the case.
I like that. I like that vibe. I think if we're going to set the new year off with smart women who care about community, who also are like fun to hang out with, if that's my vibe for 2024, I really feel like I'm nailing it.
Look, if this can replace my gym resolution, I am with you. Like,
vibe, I love it.
Good, smart, fun women. Done. Not a plank is in sight. Thank you so
much. Great. We'll trade the planks for plates. We'll like break some bread. We'll have some chats. It'll be nice.
But none of that girl dinner that I keep hearing about, which is basically like college for me. So that's fine.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, we're doing whatever like the chic grown-up version of that is.
Okay.
I'm in.
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, as we look forward to hopefully all of the good things that this year will bring us to, you know, combat the stress of it being an election year. I can't believe we're back here. The irony is that my first question I love to ask people is actually always about going back. Mm. Because when I get to sit opposite from someone such as yourself, you have this, you know, incredible life and career and your resume is wild and you're, you know, a journalist and an author and a former lawyer. And I mean, it's like the accolades go on and on. But I'm always really curious about how people who I admire so much in their adulthood became these amazing humans. So if we rewind and we meet little Laura at, you know, 8 or 9 years old, were you curious and verbose and obsessed with justice as a child? Or were you a completely, you know, different version of yourself that in hindsight makes sense?
Well, first, thank you. And I'm going to assume that anything you said is true just now for the sake of my ego for a moment, because
it's true.
I'm an amazing human, but I'm trying to be. So thank you for that. And it's actually kind of funny because I actually have a 9-year-old daughter who truly is my mini me. So it's not that hard to imagine myself as a younger version. But I had to, although she's better than I ever was, and I hope to be better than I ever will be, because that's how every mom thinks about their kids. Mm-hmm. But I gotta say, I was always a really talkative, curious, some would say nosy, but I would say curious and inquisitive and precocious sort of kid. I always felt like I was at the adult table, even though I was clearly at the little kid table. Mm-hmm. But I was always really chatty. I was always really, every one of my school reviews, I can tell you right now, was like, Laura, she's smart. If only she would stop talking in class, then that would be the thing. But I think that I was always really kind of sure-footed in some respects. I was a very mm-hmm. confident child, mostly because I have two older sisters who were so wonderful, still are so wonderful, still are my best friends, and very much so came from a family where my parents instilled in us that each of our opinions wasn't always right, but was important to voice. And so we had this thing called the Coates Corporation. And my parents would invite us in to their, you know, businesses or conversations and sort of give us all roles. I was called the resident potato peeler, which is not really that flattering looking back, but that's fine. I like potatoes. I can peel them. That's fine.
Yeah.
But they would ask, like, what's your opinion? Or what do you think about something? And as a young kid, having someone sort of look to you that you admired and respected, want to hear from you, was really invaluable for me. And it set a very wonderful tone. I can't say that throughout my whole life, I didn't have imposter syndrome. I was as, you know, insecure as the next person at different things. I was as confident as the next person. But one thing I was always really sure of was that I had every right to speak my mind. Funny enough, though, that manifested differently. I almost, as a kid, I had a really bad stutter. And so I wanted to get everything out so quickly, and it made me more self-conscious when I spoke. And so that was one thing that was different than now. But in some ways, I'm still very much the little kid who's like, what I say is important. I want to get it out right now, but having to slow myself down to do it.
That's so interesting. You said that you had a stutter as a kid, and my brain went, just like the president.
Just like the guest, Sophia.
Yeah. But like my inner little kid was like, it's okay.
Yes, there you go. See, it's, I mean, maybe I'll be on a ballot one day as a result.
Hey,
oh, I mean, I tell you.
Not now.
No, who knows? But I feel like It's so funny how many former stutterers I meet and current stutterers, if that's the phrase to use, only because I feel like there's just so many people who have so much to say and sometimes don't feel like people either have the attention span to listen to them or are not secure that people will think that what they have to say is worth the wait. And I think for a lot of people, that can be part of the cause.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, you bring up such a great point, and it's vulnerability. I think so many of us who lead any sort of public facing life or have any sort of public facing career struggle with imposter syndrome. Because you look around and you go, well, look at all these impressive people in the room and on this set and in this place. And yeah, what do I really have to contribute? But that sort of ethos from your family that you cannot assume that you're right, but your opinion is always valid. You should always be heard. I love the both and of that, because it's really about holding two things to be true at the same time. You deserve to speak your mind, and you have to make room to be right or wrong. You have to make room for other people to speak their minds too. And what a special thing that is to give to a child. I wonder if, looking back, that encouragement from them has been part of what's helped you battle your imposter syndrome, do you think?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think, look, if I do say so myself, I look younger than some. I look young sometimes in general. Other times I look around and I'm like, wait, so no one else here was born in the 80s? Okay, that's fine. I can do 90s vibe. That's okay. But I look around sometimes, and certainly, especially in the law, you know, whether it was in a courtroom, whether it was doing appeals, whether it was as a prosecutor, sometimes you would find yourself in rooms where people had to give you the benefit of the doubt. And oftentimes they did not. They oftentimes assumed that you were there for a reason other than merit, or that you were there, but you had so much more to learn than them. And so you had to almost shield yourself with armor and a bit of bravado to make sure, you know, a phrase, fake it till you make it. Like, no, it was for me, you know, never have to fake it. Just create the opportunities for yourself where you can be at ease with your intellect and in your spaces. And that sometimes that worked out really well. Other times, especially now, I mean, I remember starting out at CNN and talking about Watergate, sitting next to the people who actually were a part of Watergate and being like, well, one of us is not the other at this table. But I know that none of us were here for the Constitution, and I speak about that. And don't pat me on the head as I endeavor to do so. So you have to really give yourself that sort of champion mentality that you'll champion for yourself in those moments. But I have been many a room where I have been doubted, and I have people, you know, not really wanting to give you the full frontal, I call it, when they look you right in the eye and they're receiving the information from you, and or they'll turn to somebody next to you who said the exact same thing and then go, oh, that messenger suits me better. That messenger is someone that I give more credence and authority to. So I'm going to say that that person said it right. So there's moments of like ego, but you have to just, I mean, Sophia, I have to say, I wear my own jersey. In my mind, I actually have a jersey in my house that has coats on the back from my childhood years in a friend of mine gave me in Minnesota. And and it says coats on the back. And I will rock it mentally, figuratively, literally, to go whatever room I'm in. If I can cheer for my favorite athlete, if I can cheer for my favorite artist, if I can be a fangirl for this person or that, I can totally do that for myself. Because at the end of the day, who else is going to unless you do? And sometimes my kids, I'll put it on and they'll go, oh, Lord, who messed with mommy today? She's got on the coach jersey. And I'm like, you don't even want to know. Just let it not be you.
Let it not be you. I love that. So if you take all that wisdom and the skill set that you got from your family that has enabled you to be this woman who knows how to champion herself and who knows how to, you know, stand in the power of her intellect in a room, when do you think your interest in the law started? Because what I hear you talking about is communication, community, justice, you know, and I think at the root of justice is this idea that all people deserve to be cared for to succeed, you know, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. Where did that, you know, ability to rock your jersey and to want that for everyone else, where do you see in the timeline of your life that sort of power investing itself in the law, in the justice system? Was there like a clarifying moment, or did it evolve over time?
You know, I think it's kind of what's behind your shoulder, I guess, like the heart on your wall, because sometimes whatever your calling is, you'll, no matter where you'll end up, you'll gravitate towards your passions, no matter what. Mm-hmm. You can try as hard as you will, but you'll always gravitate there, for better or for worse. And for me, my heart in so many ways is being a voice for people who can't speak for themselves, being a champion for those who can or don't have the opportunity to be so, or just cannot do so. And I was raised, you know, my father grew up in foster care for most of his childhood until he aged out of the system. My mother grew up in North Carolina and in Connecticut, where she went north to follow her parents, who served in different households of some very prominent people who later became my clients, frankly, in the different world, the irony of that. But both of whom had to have people who would advocate and champion for them. And in different moments in their lives, were vulnerable and could not necessarily have any choice or anyone who would be between them and their backs against the wall. And so for me, I grew up in a house where that was instilled very early in our lives, of what it was like for people, my father in particular, who, when you age out of a system, when you're a 1950s, 1960s Black boy in Massachusetts, aging out of the system with siblings, with family in the area, who could not or did not choose to care for you, what you have to have within you and do, and what a difference it would make in a person's life to have somebody who was ready, willing, and able to be that champion. And that sort of fork in the road moment in his life and others' lives, where the difference was the advocacy, the wherewithal and fortitude to believe, to have faith that somebody, if not yourself, might be willing to help or change. And so for me, that was always growing up what I thought I would get into, that I would be in public service. I did not see prosecution because I thought civil rights work would only require me to do, and I did do civil rights work as well, but more in a capacity of policy or activism. And I learned pretty quickly throughout college in particular and law school that my calling was really towards being a voice for those who could not advocate and telling their stories in a way that gave them dignity, in a way that gave them hope, and in a way that gave them an opportunity to have justice and equality. And for me, that avenue was the law. Now, interestingly enough, those same feelings I have was what ended me or put me into the world of journalism, the same line of storytelling, of voicing the stories that I care most about. But there was, I would say, the clarity that I had was the culmination of a childhood being raised by two very strong-willed, very independent, very wonderful people who needed, required, and then gave back advocacy and championing for other people.
And now a word from our sponsors who make this show possible. The new Starz series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries. Well, not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claim for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
You know, I like to think about the things that inform us. Mm-hmm. The metaphor that I've come up with for it is, what tea have we been steeped in?
That's a good
you
one.
You know, mm-hmm. And because when you think about that, like the way that a tea bag soaks up everything around it, it just is. It's physics, it's culture, it's place, it's all of these things. And in our country, there's so much that's beautiful about our ideals, but there's a lot of problematic reality, right? Like when we talk about what America is in her best potential and what the country is in its realistic failing. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that we're debating teaching history is crazy to me. Yeah. But, you know, we do live in a country that has been steeped in white supremacy. We live in a country that has been steeped in misogyny. You know, the things you have faced as a woman, that I have faced as a woman, the extra layer of the things you face as a Black woman, all of this informs, to your point, your parents' story, your story, what you see. And what's inspiring to me is when I'm trying to make sense of like a system or what we've grown up in or how we might pursue justice for a community, I try to think about like, okay, if I zoom out to 30,000 feet, like when you really look from above, where are all the connection points? And the connection points you're talking about drawing as the child of parents who needed and then became those advocates, as a woman who pursued the law and through the stories of people realized she wanted to lean into journalism, like you're talking about these 30,000 foot perspectives of how do I take what I am privileged enough to experience, the good and the bad, you know, the beauty and the pain of of human existence, and bring people into it in a way that invites, that teaches, that, you know, perhaps creates more empathy, catharsis, ability for us to see each other. And there's such poetry in that.
Yeah.
And you're talking about the law and the news, like these things that can feel very rigid, but they really are beautiful when I think used to their highest good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the law really, Sophia, is just the terms on which we interact with each other.
Like
it's the boundaries we decide, the boundaries we keep, and the boundaries we break.
Mm.
We decide that justice somehow falls along that spectrum. And then, of course, there's what's right. right? Is what's right and just and what's legal and lawful. These can be at odds and conflict with one another often. And so I look at the law as far more fluid than the idea of here's what the statute says, here's what the written text is. It really is how we relate and choose to relate to one another. And what are those terms that we're comfortable with and that we're willing at times in the instance of maybe a civil disobedience of civil rights era and beyond of breaking or in a legislative body of changing. And when you think of it that way, it really has a human connection to it more than anything else, more than just this rigid, here's how I can punish and here's how I can prevent. It's also here's how I can exist as a part of this social contract. Here's what we value. You know, people often say, you tell me, you show me your budget, I'll tell you your priorities, right? You show me what you need and I'll tell you what you value. You show me the laws that are on the books and I'll tell you what a society really values. And some of these laws are totally unknown to people. I mean, just right now, this is the first show of the year. It's the beginning of 2024. There's a lot of new laws that have now been enacted that some you may agree with, some you may not agree with, but they're there. And oftentimes we as a society, unfortunately, operate under a kind of secrecy where we think the law is supposed to be totally inaccessible, that politics is supposed to be totally for the elite. And that if you don't understand the jargon that's being thrown around, you're kind of like, I don't know, an 80-year-old trying to communicate through the acronyms of Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, that only a certain group of people is eligible to understand the law and the life around us. And I think this just can't be the case. That can't be true. So one of my passions really is to make things accessible. The information itself is activism, not the opinion itself, but the access to the information. And you know, it's funny, I have to borrow, when you were talking about tea, which is such a great analogy you raised, I'll borrow this from my friend, Michael Eric Dyson, who often says this, and it has stuck with me so much. He often say, you know, life is kind of like boiling water. And the individual people, what happens when they're in it? Some people are like an egg. You put the raw egg into the water and it changes who they are inside. But people, you put a carrot in and it becomes soft. Life makes them soft all of a sudden. Or you can be the coffee bean and it goes into the hot water and it creates something powerful and stronger than it was that keeps everybody woke. Now, whether you want to be woke or not, that's a whole different attitude. But when you think about the tea, I'm going to tell them, you got to add Sophia's tea analogy in there too, because what we're steeped in is even more important.
And I think I love that. I love that idea of like, lean into being coffee. That feels exciting.
Although I don't drink coffee, I should say that.
You don't? Oh my God.
I would be crazy. I'm a tea drinker. I do chai. I have some caffeine, but I'm telling
okay.
Girl, if I had coffee, I would be like bouncing off the walls.
I just don't think I can survive without it. I don't know if it's like some, you know, generational inheritance thing from my mom's family being Italian. Like,
you had no choice.
It's like oxygen for me. If I don't have an espresso, I don't know how to be alive.
Wow.
Could be addiction, but I'm going to romanticize it and be like, it's because I'm Italian. We love pasta and coffee.
There is no judgment coming from me. That's fine. We all have our things that keep us alive.
Like, that's my storytelling bit. But something I find so fascinating is, you know, the journey that you've been on to tell the truth and to advocate for people and to activate for people. When you reference, you know, your time at the DOJ and what it was like to work as a prosecutor, you know, it when I first really got obsessed with your work, you know, and read your book when it came out last year, like, there's so much that reminds me. I mean, you're amazing. There's so much that reminds me of the sort of ways you are trying to illuminate how these systems work for people, you know, that it made me feel a lot like when I first watched Bryan Stevenson's TED Talk back in the day, and he was like really explaining to people the potential that exists in the legal system and what sort of outcomes, particularly prosecutors, control for people, and how you can either heal or harm with the letter of the law. And you just talked about this idea that you could be very black and white and you could punish or, you know, whatever it might be, like to the letter, or you could figure out how to change mm-hmm. community. And you talk about how within a system, as an advocate, as a lawyer, it is really hard when you see the writing on the wall that the pursuit of justice often creates injustice. You talk about this, that these systems, and we know this from social science data and the research and all of the health outcomes and the public health outcomes, we know that these systems do not act, you know, it's not a blind taste test for people. That there are outcomes that are unfairly and differently sort of put upon groups of people in our populace. Black and brown people suffer in ways that folks who look like me just don't very often at the hands of a justice system. You know, they're police, these communities are policed differently, they're prosecuted differently, they're judged differently. And I'm curious how, as the, again, the advocate legal mind that you are, how did that aha moment hit you in the system? Mm-hmm. And did it, because I'm just curious in the timeline for the folks at home who haven't read the book, did that illuminate for you in private practice and then make you want to go into the Justice Department? Or was it something that as you went into the Justice Department changed your, like that experience changed your awareness?
I have to say, I began in private practice and I thought that I was as knowledgeable as you ought to be in the practice of law. Mm. But when I hit the Justice Department, I realized a level of professional naivete that was completely foreign to me.
Wow.
It wasn't that I didn't understand the concepts or that I failed to understand evidentiary rules or hearsay or the mechanics of trying cases. I knew that. I was ill-prepared for what the sociological aspect of the criminal justice system entailed. First of all, I maybe prosecuted hundreds and hundreds of cases. I saw or had a hand in perhaps 1,000. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you on one hand, the number of non-Black or brown defendants I even saw.
Wow.
And it wasn't that this was white officers targeting people of color. This was a majority Black police force that I would encounter as well. And so the dynamic of that, the dynamic of a parade of people who were coming in and out of a courtroom, children to the elderly, having this tension with the system and the concept of justice, being a Black woman, having my allegiance to my community questioned by virtue of being in the space occupied by the quote unquote man, whatever that looks mm-hmm. like. It usually didn't look like the 5'3" Black woman that I am, right? But whoever they thought the man ought to be, I was never that person. And so it was always this idea of, well, how can you be a prosecutor and believe in civil rights? How can you be a prosecutor and believe in equality? Now that says volumes for people, that people believe you can either be a prosecutor, which has such a tremendous amount of power. I mean, all the decisions are made by the time really trial comes around. If you're a defense attorney, and more power to you, and we definitely need defense attorneys, but you have to be reactive to the discretion that a prosecutor exercises. Mm-hmm. By the time you get a case as a defense attorney, you already know the charges, you have nothing you can do about them. You're handed the evidence that they're going to give over to you. The arrest has been made, the indictment's already issued. All that's left now is to convince a jury that your client maybe is innocent. There's a huge weight if your name's on the other side of United States versus. And I think that even though I was well aware of that power, the ability to wield discretion and at times unfettered discretion and unchecked mostly was really shocking to me, because it meant that at the whim or the prejudices of an individual prosecutor, someone's life could be changed forever at the level of diligence that they wanted to exercise, the amount of times I would have to in the courthouse act as an advocate for the defendant? Because, of course, if you say, you know, Laura Coates on behalf of the people of the United States, that also meant the defendant. And there'd be a number of times when the defendant did not have adequate counsel to understand what plea they were agreeing to, or requests that needed to be made for the discovery, or things like that. But for me, a really big moment was, it was my husband, because my husband and I, we were having our young children when I was a prosecutor too. I have now they're 11 and 9. I can't believe it. But I remember my husband would ask me a lot about, you know, police brutality cases. Mike Brown was happening in Ferguson. Trayvon Martin, obviously not a victim of actual official law enforcement, but the interactions that displayed nonetheless by somebody who tried to usurp that role. So many cases were happening, and he would often ask me about it, and, you know, about the prosecutor's decision to charge or not charge a case. And I found myself kept asking, you know, or keep saying to him, here's why it is, and here's why I'm different, and convincing myself that, of course, I was nothing like those prosecutors who would be involved in that, or those members of law enforcement. And then his questions became fewer and further in between over time. Until one day he calls me out to the car and he says he'd been tinkering back there for quite some time. And of course, yet another Amazon box had arrived. So I didn't think anything of it. And he says, I have something that I want to show you. So I come out sort of begrudgingly to the car, like, oh God, I just want to sit on the couch right now and probably watch The House while I was something I was doing. And I come out and he has installed a camera on our car. And I said, oh my God, why do I need to have a camera on my car? Like, I'm a safe driver. What are you doing? And he's kind of, my husband, who's, you know, not a particularly emotional person at all, had tears in his eyes. And he said, it's for me, not you. And I said, well, what do you mean? And I knew the second the question left my mouth about what he was going to say, or I was thinking he would. And he said, I just wanted, if I'm ever pulled over by police, I wanted you to know what really happened, and that I would never have left you and the kids. And my heart, like, shattered in that moment, because for him, that was a love letter to me. And also a reflection that he thought that his own death at the hands of a police officer was inevitable. And here I was, a member and a part of the justice system with a muzzle where I couldn't talk. I couldn't share to the world what was really happening or what could happen. And it was one of those moments that I remember thinking, what could I do to perhaps selfishly save his life, but also to save the life of justice. And it was one of those moments that I decided that I was going to try something. I'd learned so much, I'd seen so much, and yet where I was in that space was not enough to make the love of my life comfortable, safe in any way. So I have a son and a daughter, and I needed to do something. And when I left the Justice Department, I write about this and the different moments of tension in the book, and, you know, what it's like to be called on to aid in the deportation of someone, and what that does to the internal conflicts you never expect to have in your life. That was when I decided that I wanted to go into journalism. I didn't have a background. I didn't know what I was doing. So I literally, when I left, I was nursing my daughter still. I had my kids. My son is 18 months older. I was posted up in a Panera Bread, sitting by the fire, nursing an orange Pecot tea because it was free refills. Like, I'm poor. I got to get this done. I'm poor because I just retired from my life. And I'm trying to figure out what to do next. And thankfully, my husband was thin and loved ramen. I had to figure it out. But yeah. I never looked back because I don't know. There's something, like, I haven't changed the world by any stretch, but at least I know one foot in front of the other. I am illuminating issues that could make somebody think differently about how justice could work.
And now a word from our sponsors. The new Starz series, Marian George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is, With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Stars and the Stars app.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries. Well, not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claim for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
I talk a lot with friends who are justice-minded about this. Mm-hmm. You know, that in our 20s, we were like, we're going to be the generation that saves the world. And then you're like, oh, wow, really incredible people have been at this for literally hundreds of years. Maybe I need to take several seats. I never want to lose the goal of flipping the scales. Mm-hmm. But I think the wisdom that comes with age and experience is that you have to desire something that folks older than us might tell us is an unrealistic utopia. Mm-hmm. But you have to be pragmatic enough to make the incremental change that will make our children's lives better than ours and that made our lives better than our grandparents' lives. You have to be willing to do the long work, like real activism, real advocacy, real policy change. It's not like the refresh where you drag your thumb down and there's 80 new Instagram photos to look at in 9 seconds. It's like long, unsexy dedication that requires longevity and relationship. And when I hear you talk about these sort of watershed moments in your life, and you say, like, you know, I haven't changed the world, I think you've changed a lot of people's worlds. I think that's the pragmatic potential to achieve that ideal. Like, every person who has encountered your work or who's read your book is changed. And that's a big deal.
Well, thank you for that. This is where you plug the words work in progress, girl.
Well,
like this is what happened, right? I mean, this is, we're all, I think, in so many ways, just, you're a very accomplished woman. You're very ambitious. It's evident. So there is always this goal to check things off. And the to-do list, I'm sure for you, is long, and I'm sure you've got a lot of things checked off. So many of us have that drive in us. And I think when it comes to justice and it comes to issues of real social importance, whatever your conscience is telling you should happen, it's more like the practice of medicine or the practice of law. It's the practice of advocacy. It's the practice of justice. It's the practice of things. And that's very hard when you want to get it done. Because like in that game, remember when we're younger, the go to like the arcade, the whack-a-mole, like try to solve one and one pops up. Although I'm really good at that game, so don't challenge me, but like you're doing the whole thing, right? And at the end of it, you're like, there's still something else. But you have to just keep going to know, all right, well, hopefully when my arm gets tired, there's somebody right next to me going, I'll literally take the baton / mallet and I'll keep at it for that next person. And something somehow keeping us all driven to do it. That's the hard part.
So something that fascinates me, because that's the thing, right? Like when you commit yourself to trying to better your community, it is whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
Like you realize, oh, there's not going to be a day where we get to the end of this road. We're like, we're on the road forever and we're dealing with what's coming in from these perpendicular streets. Like, oh my God. When you talk about that aha moment and it crystallizes and it's so personal in that exchange that day with your husband, that's really profound and moving to listen to. What I want to dig into a little bit is that bigger concept of understanding the importance of your role as a prosecutor and the fact that from the outside, a lot of people looked at you and said, how could you do this? Mm-hmm. How could you prosecute? You know, it's not lost on me that this has been a lot of the vice president's journey where people say, well, you know, you worked on the wrong side of the law, you know, for your community, and you go, hold on, it's actually the prosecutors who can either indefinitely harm a life or redirect it. You can create accountability that within a society shapes people into better versions of themselves, or you can wield accountability like a hammer and bludgeon folks with it. And it will always be unfair to some communities more than others. It requires a pragmatism to say, I want to wield a gavel, not a hammer. I want to shift the way the system exercises, quote, justice on people. And I imagine it requires an immense amount of fortitude to withstand the kind of criticism that comes at you from people who don't necessarily know the inner workings of a justice system in the way that you even say you were naive to until you got to the DOJ. So I guess I'm curious, going from private practice into the Justice Department, working in the Civil Rights Division, what, when you entered it, felt like your goalposts? What were the things you really wanted to work on? And how did you, as individual, Laura, how did you sort of know when it was time to shift, to move on?
Well, it's a great question, because there's rarely ever one moment. There's be almost like a, you know, an every sort of nanosecond you find yourself reconfiguring and adjusting. It's like a watching your eye or a lens of a camera try to focus on something. It's constantly shifting to make sure that what you want and what your why is in view and there. I would say, you know, when you look at the justice system, really it's in some ways a legal system that we pursue justice and hopefully one day we'll catch it. But discretion is something that people don't think enough about. We know we want a jury of your peers. We know why it's so important to have a jury of one's peers, because you want to be judged by people who maybe have either had similar life circumstances or have perhaps walked half a mile, if not a mile, in your shoes, or somebody you can believe will understand and see the holistic 360 person. We don't think about that same prospect for those who make charging decisions, though, because that's also where it's necessary to have a prosecutor of your peer. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm going to be soft on crime because I have walked a mile. I may have walked a mile in your shoes and chose a different direction, and the laws may tell you that it was very clear and there's no excuse for the behavior. It doesn't mean because you are contemplative and thoughtful about the law or the benefit of the doubts or grace, or that maybe law enforcement got it wrong, or that you believe in the presumption of innocence to the point where you're willing to question and dot every I, cross every T. That doesn't make you soft on crime. It makes you alert. It makes you hard on the Constitution and what it's supposed to have and mean for you. And you should be that. And I'm naturally skeptical. So that for, that part for me was easy. But what was difficult was being able to keep one's head down and focus and not want to defend your every action.
Right.
Because I knew that as much as people were cringing at the thought of a Black woman as a prosecutor, which, by the way, there are many of us, but cringing at that thought, I would look at the victims and say, so they don't get to have somebody who's their champion. The only focus is on who is the suspect and defendant. That's the only way we judge who they ought to get a chance.
I looked at the lens
of the victims and those who deserve every bit of championing as those who may have been either wrongly accused or overcharged or frankly charged appropriately, but a system of justice which only had a punishment and not a therapeutic and rehabilitation minded view of sentencing. There's so many moments of it. And so I have to tell you, as much as it was difficult for me to at times reconcile what I thought was right, what was lawful, or the criticism, there were so many more moments when I knew without a shadow of a doubt that but for me being at having a seat at the table, justice would not have been served, whether it was on behalf of the victim or on behalf of the person who was charged incorrectly or at all. I knew in my heart, but that was a conversation, much like we all have those moments when, you know, I don't know what your quiet moments are like, or moments when you might judge or second guess yourself or try to talk yourself through a moment. Whatever that looks like for you, when I would have those moments, I had to go back to the why. Why did you want it? Why are you here? There are far more lucrative options. There are far more stress-less options. There are different places to do the work you're doing. What was your why? So going back to that why and holding it in my hands and my heart was how I went through it. Because, you know, you're in an industry where people, probably just like me, they seek power just to say they have it. They're working out some childhood issues,
right?
And they want to be able to be in this position to abuse and exploit, or be the person that gets to have the say, the thumbs up, thumbs down, you know, emperor in the Colosseum.
Yes.
And if that's your why, please don't ever go into the practice of law, and please don't ever go into the prosecution's office, because that's when injustice will occur every single time. You have to go in with the why of why, because people deserve to have their voices heard. They ought to be able to believe that this legal system can be just, and that people have to be able to know that, you know, no one's above the law. And if you don't have people that get that, we failed.
And now a word from our wonderful sponsors. The new Starz series, Marian George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Stars and the Stars app.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries. Well, not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claim for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
What a profound reminder when you talk about holding that both and. Holding awareness of the immense power that a person in the role of prosecutor has over the accused, but also the immense responsibility that you have for the person who was harmed.
Right.
And to hold the reality that both of those people deserve justice, that requires a lot of emotional and moral might to take care of people, you know, across the spectrum. And yeah, it's certainly not to care across that spectrum is not something that a bully would be inherently great at. And so to figure out how to get more caring people into these spaces does feel like it is of paramount importance. And when they're not, you see the sort of tessellations of harm happen. I mean, I know that one of the things that you specialized in was the enforcement of voting rights throughout the country. And we have watched people use our elections as a bully pulpit. We watch people who do not have equity and justice at the sort of core of their mission work on assassinating voting rights around the country, rolling back the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, refusing, you know, to give it the re-upping that it deserved on the floor. Like, it is very scary to watch that. And in the last election, there were so many moves made that violated the voting rights of people all across the country and in outsized ways violated the voting rights of minority groups and people of color. You know, we watched people being purged from voter rolls state to state unjustly. And not to go doom and gloom, but it is 2024 and we are, you know, coming into an election year. I know so many people worry about this stuff, but don't exactly know what they can do about it. So as the resident expert, you know, you're the only person in this Zoom call who has been at the DOJ. And as an author and as a journalist, as someone who uses her voice to encourage us, how do you say to the folks at home, you know, these are the things you can do as the election approaches at the end of the year? These are the ways you can stand up for your rights and the rights of people in your community to be able to exercise their right to vote. You know, are there things we should be looking at and doing this year?
You know, absolutely. And I think the biggest thing is, and I know it sounds like I'm being tongue in cheek, I'm really not. You have got to stay not tired, right? The exhaustion that can set in when you want to throw up your hands and go, oh, it's all politics and how exhausting it is. And, you know, there are people who are counting on, they are praying, hoping, and guaranteeing that you'll be so exhausted that you just don't want to show up, that you'll be tired. You'll want to throw in the towel. You'll want to opt out. And that's the most dangerous thing you can do is opt out. You have to really look at the issues, not as, you know, a ping pong where people are just trying to give you a whiplash to make you check out, but really, what do you care about? What do you want to see? And then demand that of the platforms of what they're talking about. So many politicians and candidates in particular distract. They want to give you these 10,000 foot views, and you want to know about what's in front of you. One of the most selfish times of your life and one of the most selfless times of your life is when you're in the voting booth, right? You're there. One, you want to care about what you personally want to see, and also what ought to be in a world you want to operate in. And those things can sometimes be difficult to reconcile or very easy. But in the event, you have to be able to lean in. You have to figure out, make a list. Like, I'm a big journal person. I make lists all the time. Like, I can't go into a store. Like, I can't even go into Home Goods anymore because I just buy temp journal. And I'm like, I don't need this, but I need this. It's pretty. The cover's good. I make like lists. Like, what do I care about? What do I want? And I try to manifest it. And you manifest it in voting by figuring out the candidates that are actually saying something that speaks to you. Not what you want to hear, but actually holding them to it. That's number one, avoiding exhaustion. Number two is be very, very vigilant about the voter rolls, as you mentioned. That's the list that you're on to figure out whether you're registered. And some areas of the country will take you off if you haven't voted for a certain amount of time. Others will question the identification you have to prove that you are who you say you are, and also are at the address to make the precinct correspond with where you're supposed to be voting. Be vigilant about how you're trapped in that system. Make sure you're registered. Make sure you know where you're supposed to go. You have the proper identification. You have the proper paperwork to prove whatever you need to do. If you know you're not going to be in person, you have to be proactive about getting an absentee ballot and doing it ahead of time, because what you say matters, and what you say is how you vote. And then finally, I would say you have to be very vigilant about the powerful people who don't want you to have any power. And one way they do that is dilute your voting strength by gerrymandering, by making sure that whatever voting group you're a part of, however you tended to vote, if you're thinking, now, how can I make that less powerful? Is it by dissecting it and chopping it up? Is it by concentrating a population that I think votes a certain way in one area? Or is it by changing districts? What can I do to undermine and dilute your power? That's what you have to pay attention to. And notice, most of those things, everything I just said, has nothing to do with how you vote. That really is the least of a democracy's concerns. It's being able to do so. Nobody ever guaranteed you that you get to vote for the winner.
Right.
You ought to have the opportunity, a meaningful opportunity, vote for your candidate of choice. And every time someone takes that away from your neighbor, you got to pay attention, because your door will be knocked on next.
Yes.
So those are the ways I think you have to really think about it, and don't think that any of this is in the rearview mirror. It is in front of you. It is down the road, unless you're vigilant.
Right, right. And we've got to keep applying the pressure. You know, something I've, one of the things I try to talk to a lot of young people about is, to me, I look at democracy as a verb. It is an action. It requires consistent interaction. It requires pressure. It requires attention. Because when we get complacent, when we think, oh, we won that fight.
Yeah.
The people who didn't want us to win it in the first place, they're working every day to take the wins away from us. So we really have to maintain our dedication and our action around, you know, equity, justice, the sort of social constructs that are meant to support us. And to that end, I'm really curious, you know, again, as the woman who knows the letter of the law the best, who also is walking us all through what's happening in the world, you know, live on air. By the way, the show is just so good. And for our friends at home, I'm sure you all are, but if you are not watching Laura Coates live on CNN, get it together. This is your homework assignment for 2024. The show is so good. And as you're covering what's currently happening, you know, we can't not mention that things are wild leading into the election. Mm-hmm. You know, Donald Trump has been indicted on, I think it's 91 charges now and counting. It's wild. You know, people are talking about the 14th Amendment. You can't hold office if you've led an insurrection against the United States. Colorado has blocked him based on the 14th Amendment from the ballot, from the primary ballot. Maine is following steps. You know, some people are saying that this oxygenates his campaign, that this helps him play victim, helps him pretend, you know, that he's not of the system. Do you think the legal challenge here stands? I mean, people say this is what our founding fathers were trying to protect against, you know, was the enemy from within. And other people are saying that this is going to bolster his run. What do you think, as both our journalist and our guest who is a pro at the legal analysis?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, the Constitution did not contemplate every scenario. I mean, really, there's limited words, and it certainly didn't envision everything that we've ever endured as a country. Mm-hmm. But foundationally, it did try to resolve a lot of the issues we talk about today. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why what's going on with the former president, Donald Trump, is so interesting and problematic is because there are questions about whether the Constitution or the founding fathers even had a solution in mind. And if they did, is what's happening now with the removal from ballots, for example, is that what they had in mind? Is the 14th Amendment, which is, you know, normally people think about the first 14th Amendment, think about you know, equal protection under the law. That's the synonymous way people think about the 14th Amendment. There's that little known clause about, look, you also can't hold office if you've been engaged in an insurrection. It really was meant to address to the Civil War and members of the Confederacy who had gone against the government of the United States, the country, and then wanted to maintain or hold office in the future or in the present. So because that particular clause does not address and doesn't name the president in particular, and there are other aspects of the Constitution that talk about the president in particular, there's one argument to suggest, well, then obviously the 14th Amendment did not actually intend to include the president because the framers would have said that if they meant that. On the other hand, the Constitution is founded on a number of things that at its foundation obviously envisioned something else. Another big issue with this, the legality of the issue, is a concept of due process, meaning, you know, a notice and opportunity to be heard. The way that translates to this discussion, though, Sophia, it really is, well, if I haven't been actually convicted of an insurrection, then why am I being removed because of claims of an insurrection? So do I have to have the presumption of innocence? And doesn't that carry through, except if I have an actual indictment or a prosecution or a conviction? Well, Jack Smith, the special counsel in Washington, D.C., who's in charge of a number of cases, didn't actually charge Trump with insurrection. He has four charges, none of which are that. Okay, that's one argument. But a Colorado court found that he had engaged in an insurrection. Is that enough to say, well, I have a judicial finding, that's enough? So this is why the Supreme Court is going to be so important, as these are really novel issues that require a very specific and thorough reading of the Constitution, of the discussion surrounding the Constitution. Common sense also plays a part of this.
Oh, you mean the part where we watched it live on TV?
Yeah, you mean that part? I mean, it's part of it? Yeah, that's all part of it too.
Interesting, yeah.
Oh, it's details, Sophia. All the attitudes surrounding it are, how will the courts resolve it? For now, you've got places like Maine with the Secretary of State, who is in charge of elections there, says, nope, I'm keeping them off the ballot. Colorado, keeping them off the ballot. Whether it'll be a trend in other states, I just don't know. But at the end of the day, this is why the vigilance is so important, and why common sense and the law has to somehow come together to make democracy work, and why right now, you know, that phrase, a republic if you can keep it, is top of mind.
Yes. And now a word from our sponsors that I really enjoy, and I think you will too. The new Starz series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries. Well, not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claim for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
I have a follow-up question to that, because this confuses me a bit. It seems like we're doing... you know, for thee, but not for me a lot these days in the upper echelons of government, because there's this sort of line for folks who fall in line behind the former president that, you know, the impeachments didn't matter and all these ways he's broken the law and, you know, him leading an insurrection and calling domestic terrorists very fine people and all of these things feels crazy. And then at the same time, the GOP is admitting in public, I mean, on the record, so many of their elected lawmakers have said, oh, there's absolutely no evidence for any wrongdoing on the part of our current president, Joe Biden. But we're going to lead an impeachment inquiry into him anyway, because it'll make for good TV. And it's wild to me that they can say that and do that and tie up the courts to do that. But though they've many of them have admitted that this is a TV stunt, his son is being investigated for impropriety with his taxes. And there seems to be this double standard where, you know, Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump made $650 million, you know, while working at the White House and having security clearance that the government said they shouldn't have, but Trump gave it to them anyway. And then Hunter Biden doesn't work at the White House and has never made nearly that much money, you know, likely, allegedly, whatever the proper terminology is here. I'm not the lawyer. Please don't come for me, internet. You know, didn't file his taxes properly. And if he didn't, he's going to get charged and he's going to owe the government a bunch of money. Fine. But how can these sort of double standards with kids of the president and then the presidents themselves, evidence of wrongdoing versus admittedly no evidence of any wrongdoing at all. Why is it like this? Why do people kind of go, eh, Trump's just a wild card, and then hold Biden's feet to the fire? What do you think that is?
Well, I mean, selective nepotism cracks me up. Like it's only okay if some people are privileged in this way and can trace their last name. I don't know what to say about that. But I will say, when you look at, as you said, the sort of selective persecution and when you want to turn a blind eye and when you want to look at it, that's why politics can be so frustrating, because you can even be completely forthcoming about your motivation. And for some people, it doesn't matter. There is an entire identity politically now. You know, you have Republicans, you have Democrats, you have Independents. I think you have almost a fourth category of people. And the fourth category is provocateur. Or yes. Those who are just anti, or you know what? I've been so frustrated with the system that I am going to be the anti-system. And so whatever that means for them, they'll latch on to. I think that what you're seeing with the Bidens versus the Kushners and the Trumps of the world versus the impeachment of Trump and impeachment inquiry of Biden, I think is really what happens when deflection is at its peak. Because think of all of the things that need to get done right now in Congress and the priorities that are being set. They're not connected with what the average person really wants and needs. It is the idea of the point being provocation, the point being, there's not that there hasn't been some violations of the law, and that can happen. And we can certainly, you should, ought to look into that and investigate and prosecute if appropriate. I stand by that. But if the whole point is to muddy the waters and then expect people not to thirst for different politicians and candidates, I don't know what we can do to drill into people's heads that while you're playing at this game, there are people who are dying. While you're playing around trying to tell me that you'd like to inquire and to find out if there's a reason to have the inquiry, I can give you some inquiries about healthcare right now.
Yes.
To be answered. And I think that's what it's incumbent upon the voters to dictate the terms for those who asked you for the opportunity to lead, to represent. Right. They weren't like, not the Hunger Games. You don't have to like, you don't pay tribute all of a sudden and whistle in the background. Love that series. You have to actually have you've asked for the chance. You've asked for it. You weren't assigned the role of representative. Mm-hmm. You asked us to do it. So I think people have to just vocalize and voice their frustration.
And that's such a good reminder too, that it really can be up to us to show them that these distraction tactics and that this sort of smoke and mirror show isn't going to distract us. If we vote on the issues that matter to us, reproductive care and access, fundamental freedoms, healthcare, we can by voting on the actual issues, hopefully slow down or stop the anti-train, as you mentioned it. I'm really excited, and honestly, you are one of the people who makes me feel relieved that I will have somewhere to go to learn throughout 2024 as the election approaches, you know, to be able to watch your show, to be able to sort of gain wisdom from your analysis. So I want to sort of thank you in advance for that. And
no pressure. Like, yeah, thank you for the education you've given people this year. I wrote you a line. Thank you so much.
But I just know we're going to get more of what you do so well. And I'm grateful for that. And I also, you know, I know that so often you do get asked about the legal analysis and these big issues and what's happening out in the field and all of it. And so thank you for giving us your perspective. And I also am just such a fan of you as a person. And so I want to be able to end on a, or get closer to wrapping up, I should say, on a more personal note. And I am just so enamored with the story that your son's idol from the Bucks gave him a pair of shoes after a recent game. And I was just wondering if, you know, that's one of the wonderful things I think about if you do get to have a job in a public field, is you might get an amazing moment like that for your kid. And I would just love to ask about that.
Yeah.
You know, so that it isn't all election, you know, wild political, whatever. I want to know about the personal stuff too.
Well, look, you know, first of all, like most of my life is spent mommy, right? That's the bulk of it. So it's funny because my kids, like, I'm like every other mom in our phones, our friends' names are saved under who their kid is. Like,
yeah,
Jonah's mom. Oh, good. Jonah's mom. That's how we're doing, right? So it's fun to have moments like that. And so my son is a huge Giannis fan. And he loved Giannis's, obviously, his game. He's an incredible athlete. But he loved his story. He had us all sit down and watch the movie about his life story, about what his family struggled to do when they were in Greece, about the bond, about hard work, about him and his brother sharing the same pair of sneakers and not playing at the same time, and just how he became a citizen here, and just the entire process. And so I was blown away by him as an athlete. And I'm not somebody who loves hero worship for your kids. Like, you know, I'm very cautious about who they seek to emulate or they revere, because, well, frankly, the heroes can let you down sometimes. So I try to help my kids say, look, what qualities do you like about a person? Love those and, you know, think about the rest. So I had a chance to go to Madison Square Garden. And I was given tickets. I shouldn't be on the court. I'm not courtside material, people. Okay. So I was in Madison Square Garden and I had courtside, and we thought, okay, we're going to be able to, this is amazing. I'd been to Madison Square Garden, but I was in the nosebleed section and happy to be there years ago. My son had never gone there. He loves the Bucks. And so we sat down and I thought, oh my God, this is an incredible thing. And we were just excited to be, like, they had free hot dogs. We were thrilled. We loved the whole thing.
Yeah.
So then we saw the players start to come, and we were sitting next to the Milwaukee Bucks bench of all places.
Wow.
And my son was cheering. He was going crazy. He had all his little basketball cards laid out, thinking, maybe I'll get to have one of them sign it. And of course, I'm like, don't ask for an autograph. It's a weird thing. I don't know what the rules are here. Don't do anything. Like, I'll play it cool. And so we're sitting there, and they're doing the whole celebrity cam, and all the different celebrities in the rows are highlighted, and I'm cheering for people I'm fans of, and my son is laser focused on the players, and he's giving them high fives and giving them back. The whole game is like this. And so we thought, this is so exciting. I had there's a towel. I took the towel. I'm like, here you go, have this free towel, et cetera. And I am saying, and you can hear in the video, I'm saying thank you to someone who gave me this towel. And all of a sudden, the game is over, and Giannis is on the court, and he motions over to my son and says, come here. And my son's like, what? And he gets up wearing the Giannis jersey. And I'm like, oh my God. I jump over the seats. I am the paparazzi in this. I'm running between the cameras. I'm on the court. And he is taking off his sneakers. And my son is grabbing his head, like his mind is blown. He's trying to keep his brain in his head. And he's like, oh my God. And Giannis bends over, he takes off his shoes. He says, do you have a Sharpie? Now my son had one because the basketball card. He's like, I have one in my backpack. We're somewhere, whatever. He goes, no, I'll get one. He goes and gets a Sharpie. Giannis gets a Sharpie. and finds the shoes. And my son is, I'm bawling, Sophia. I am bawling.
Oh my God. Like,
I have no role in this. It was just the goodness of Giannis looking at a kid having a good time at the game. He signs the shoes, hands them to him, hugs him, says, do you want to take a picture? And he's like, sure. He's like, okay, pose for mommy. And I'm like crying and videoing it. He says, okay, Merry Christmas. My son is like, thank you so much. And then, of course, because it's me and I'm a little bit crazy, after I'm filming, I'm like, wait, the picture didn't take. Come back. It was good. And he's like, he posing it like this. I'm like, thank you. I got it. Thank you. And my son just turns and he's like, oh, mom. And I am dying. Like, cause you know,
by the way, I'm sobbing.
It was so cute. That was like, and my son, it was so cute. We ended up like we had to get like security to have us take, they were like, don't walk through the crowd. Walk behind security.
Yeah.
I have these shoes now that I haven't out yet. And I'm like, oh my God, I wrap them in a towel. I have them under my shirt. Like I'm basically exposed, but I don't care. So I have to make sure this works. And so then later on that night, we're actually getting back to, cause I live in DC, we're getting back to DC, and my son like wakes up from the plane, and he goes, he's like, oh God, mom, where's your phone? Where's your phone? And I'm like, oh, it's right here. He starts scrolling through the phone. He goes, oh, it did happen.
Oh my God.
That was the day before Christmas Eve. And so when Christmas came, the presents were there under the tree and we placed them the night before because my kids still pretend to indulge me and believe in Santa Claus. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but they indulge me.
So sweet.
And he goes, there's presents for me. I already had it. I was like,
oh my God.
I love this kid. So thank you, Giannis. And by the way, thank you to all the players because they were giving him high fives. And I just, I know people assume that because maybe they've seen me on CNN that perhaps I had some like marionette, like strings pulling in there.
Right.
I did not. Giannis just saw a kid and remembered what it was like to be a kid.
That's
and
so
can you
amazing.
Imagine like who it's is, so who is amazing. Your person? Like if you were a kid, Sophia, and that person was like, come here, let me talk to you and give you a hug and wish you Merry Christmas. Would you have just died?
Oh, for me, Oprah. I used to ask my mom, I was like, mom, last period at school. And by the way, I'm an 80s baby too. And I was like, last period of school ends at 3. Oprah starts at 3. We're not learning anything at the end of the day. So you should pick me up at 2:45 so I can have my butt in front of the TV by 3:00 so I can learn from Oprah. And my mom was like, you are 6 and a half. Why are we having this conversation? Like, you are the weirdest kid. I'm not pulling you out of school early so you can watch Oprah. I'm not doing it. And so then we agreed that my parents would set the VCR for me. Like, it was a whole thing. And as an adult, like to have been in rooms with her, years ago, pre-pandemic, I was invited to one of her gospel brunches at her house. And I literally,
dying for you.
I stood in front of the mirror and I looked at myself and I was like, could little you have ever imagined this? What is happening? And yeah, I think it's part of the reason that it makes me sob to listen to you tell the story. Thinking about that experience for you as a mom and what you get to watch and just that people always have the capacity for kindness like that. That's magical.
First of all, I'm loving the vision of you trying to get relief for Oprah.
By the way, this is why my parents can't believe I'm not a lawyer. They were like, you negotiated for everything always. And I was like, eh.
You know what though? I think you're exactly where you need to be. And look at you. You got it. You've got your own show. There you go. Sophia's on. That's the whole thing.
We figured it out.
There you go. Just give out some cars and you're going to be good to go. It's all part of it.
Could you imagine if I was like, this week on Work in Progress, you get a car. I would love it.
Imagine, you know what? I'm going to manifest that for you. That's going to be
okay,
the
great.
Resolution. That your show is going to be the one word. All of a sudden, and someone right now is going to tell their mom or dad, I need you to pick me up because I'm not learning anything. Just tell me a Sophia show. It's a work in progress. That's what we're doing. I applaud it. 2024. Aww. Here she comes.
You sweet angel. Thank you. Well, that leads me into my last and favorite question to ask every guest, which is, what is your work in progress right now?
Oh my gosh. What is my work in progress? You know, I think my work in progress is knowing that there, for every dream you accomplish, should tell you to dream even bigger.
Mm.
And feeling like that's okay and that more can happen. And also learning more how to manifest completely. You know, it's you get into the category of once you've taken a leap of faith, and I certainly have in my career, two things can happen. Either one, you can think it was a fluke, or you can keep leaping with and believe that there'll be some soft landings or be comfortable with the hard ones. Mm. And so for me, my work in progress is always reminding myself to keep leaping and manifest the landing.
I love that. And honestly, it feels so fitting that it's the second, because you giving us that reminder to manifest, I'm like, that has to be the New Year's resolution. You said it. Let's go manifest some things. Let's give cars away. Let's do it all.
We'll never forget what we steeped ourselves in, though, too. Hope is joy
yes.
to you.
Mm, I love that. Thank you so much, Laura. This has really been such a joy.
It's so fun for me. Thank you so much. Congratulations on all that you've accomplished and what's ahead of you as well. It's really such a pleasure to see. For all of us who are fans of yours, it's such a pleasure to see this trajectory continue.
Mm, thank you so much. That means a lot. The new Starz series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.